not a problem. Okay, I have 3 minutes. Okay.
Keep away.
Okay. Good morning. My name is Colin Kelly. I'm the staff attorney at Orange County Coast Keeper. I'm also the staff attorney at Inland Empire Water Keeper. I'm sort of wearing both hats today. I first wanted to thank the board for participating in Coast Keeper had an environmental law conference that we put on through, funded by Cali PA's Environmental Training and Enforcement grant award. So this board came out in force. We had both Region 4, 9, and 8 participate, and by far, Region 9 was the most active and the most engaged in the entire process. And we really appreciate it. It made the conference a lot better. I also want to thank the staff on, this is the best regional board that I deal with. I deal with 4 regional boards for workshops. These are expertly run, and I encourage all the other regional boards when I have the opportunity to emulate Region 9 on that. Let me quickly discuss the sort of the landscape ordinances that came up first. We are doing a survey currently on Orange County municipal ordinances dealing with conversion of traditional to drought tolerant landscaping. And it's something that's not frequently discussed, but we realized that of the around 35 different municipalities, that would also include actually the county, 7 actually have restrictions on converting your traditional parkway, that's the area between the street, parkway, curb, front yard, or residential areas, some sort of restriction. And I hate to say it, but Mission Viejo is actually the most restrictive in Orange County. It does not say you have to have lawn, but what it does say is that your parkway must look like your neighbor's parkway. So we are working with cities. We will be reaching out to Mission Viejo soon on how we might be able to encourage a transition in that, because converting front yards, while Mission Viejo may allow that, it's much cheaper to test it out on a parkway. If you don't like it, you can change back. It's an easier transition to drought tolerant using less water in a period of drought. I don't know if you saw it again yesterday, Riverside County actually has certain cities that are citing homeowners for allowing their lawns to die. So that is one thing that I think regional boards should be aware of. That's not all cities, but certain cities, it was in the Press Enterprise yesterday. So while the message is getting out, I don't think it's getting out necessarily to the local enforcement staff uniformly. Finally, the last thing we want to talk about, it came up briefly, was the receiving water limitation issues. I attended, for both Waterkeeper and Coast Keeper, all of the meetings before the San Diego permit was adopted. We attended the workshops here and will continue to attend any of these meetings, all of them. We think that the Los Angeles receiving water limitation language that has been brought up at, before every board that we participated with is a little hyperbolic. This tends to be a concern, an opportunity to get this language out more than a legitimate litigation concern for some of these dischargers. LA is a unique situation, and we think that in San Diego, this board did the right thing by viewing the Los Angeles receiving water limitation language as a departure and from the norm, and continuing with the normal language that is seen throughout the state. We would encourage the board to retain that language in this and in any other permit. We are also encouraging Region 8 to do the same, to keep the language that is in Region 9's permit, that's traditionally in Region 8's, for both the North Orange County permit, which we hope they will, as well as for the unified permits for the Inland Empire. It seems like San Bernardino and Riverside will be combined into one MS4 permit, emulating what happened down here. We think that's a move in the correct direction. We look forward to continuing to work with Orange County, Riverside, and regional board staff on this and other issues. Thank you.
Thank you.
Roger.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Once again, I'm Roger Buto, Clean Water Now. We did want to clarify something with all due respect to Mr. Beenan. Riverside is included in this because these are in fact areas, their watersheds drain in the Pacific Ocean. So perhaps, Michael, that dials you in why Riverside is engaged in this process, because they obviously, they may be 20, 25 miles away, but they do eventually drain to the coast. Something we'd like clarification from staff on, maybe a minor issue to some people, but San Juan Creek, San Mateo Creek, we're very desirous of getting a little more information on where is the line. Guess we can send an RFP out for that vertical line in the meantime, but we'd like to know, what is the difference? Why does the board look at this? We were informed that San Juan is a large river. In fact, it is a creek, at least that's what it's named. So if we could get more clarification on how the board looks at the difference. It's a matter of nomenclature, but defining your terms is extremely important for those of us that are trying to analyze this. To move on, with all due respect also to Gila Bay, their report card is just an aggregator. They take the sampling done by the co-permittees and their agencies. So when you look at the Gila Bay report card, it's rather interesting. You know, fecal indicator bacteria, the acronym is FIB, and we think that's kind of appropriate in a kind of a post 9/11 world. We said irony, you know, may not be dead, or maybe it isn't. Well, I don't know. Bottom line for us is, we're not really getting a true picture. Fecal indicator bacteria are FIBs because they don't really disclose the toxicity. For instance, Gila Bay doesn't do their own testing. They rely on our testing, and our testing is for bacteria. So the AB-411 seemed like a groovy idea when Mr. Wayne out of San Diego pushed it, but we don't think it applies to some of the actual recreational aspects of receiving waters. Moving on, we think we have a poster child for some of this. It is disturbing. We heard the word lockstep. I don't think we're even close to being in lockstep, and maybe perhaps being the son of a German immigrant that fled National Socialism, I'm not too comfortable even with the word lockstep. But that said, we're very disturbed. We've been looking at Salt Creek recently, as you know, and it is ironic that the testing done by their healthcare agency and by the South Orange County Wastewater Authority, and this will surprise you, if you were asked which of the three exceeds limitations during dry weather, if I told you Aliso Creek, Salt Creek, and Main Beach and Laguna, my guess is your guess would be the same as mine, Aliso. In fact, that's not true. During dry weather, between 2006 and 2011, Aliso Creek exceeded dry weather sampling for Rec 1 55% of the time. Salt Creek, 82% of the time. Main Beach and Laguna, 80% of the time. Now, here's the irony. Well, we don't like diversions because we think that's just exactly what they are, a diversion. We believe, and I know there was something written by Colonel Robertus 14 years ago about diversions in Laguna and other places. They just take the water, move it to a waste treatment plant that cannot handle, and then you have to deal with it on the stormwater permits or the ocean outfall pipes. So we think that the treatment plants weren't designed for, nor are they capable of really reducing much of anything. They just send these toxic bundles out the outfall pipes. We also have an issue with the whole sampling procedure techniques. I mean, when you have this many exceedances, and by the way, in Laguna Beach, we have 20 diversions. Okay, well, they're not working. Salt Creek has a treatment plant that diverts, but yet 82% of the time it surpasses. So we think that there needs to be some sensitivity to the fact that no one should get out their guitar and play Kumbaya, because we're not there yet. Thank you.
The next category of speakers, we then have a focused topic at the end. Is anybody from the public who wants to speak on this agenda item, as opposed to earlier you got to speak on no agenda item? Seeing none, we'll move on. We're now going to have input on the question of prior lawful approval coming from our meeting in Sacramento. We know that in Region 1, which is the north coast of California, they have to deal with prior unlawful approvals quite often. So we're in a better position. Can we first hear from the San Diego County co-permittees and stakeholders on this issue?
Yeah.
Let's use the clicker.
Mr. Chairman, I wonder if I might inquire, would you like to ask the speakers how much time they think they're going to take? You might want to consider a lunch break now or later, but just to see if they are indeed going to use 50 minutes, you might want to consider a lunch break sooner.
We might, but since we're on a roll here.
Very good.
It says here that you've generously been allocated 30 minutes.
Yes.
Okay.
I promise you I won't use most of it.
We promise you that we'll keep to that.
Okay. Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the board. I'm John Van Ryan with the County of San Diego Watershed Protection Program. There are actually three of us that are going to be speaking on prior lawful approval today. I'll go first. I'll be followed by Heather Straub with the City of San Diego. And then you'll get a slightly more detailed presentation by Wayne Rosenbaum, representing the Building Industry Association. I'm primarily going to be giving you a little bit of background introduction to the issue and then providing some county perspective on that. I am only speaking for the county today, although as you'll hear, there has been additional coordination with other co-permittees to some extent. I want to make sure that everybody's clear that I'm only representing the county perspective today. Development and redevelopment projects can take many years to complete, but regulatory requirements sometimes change over the life of a project. When they do, decisions have to be made as to whether a project will comply with the updated regulatory requirements or whether it will instead be grandfathered under earlier provisions. Prior lawful approval, or PLA as I'll be referring to it, approaches set the ground rules for how these decisions are made. They can significantly affect project costs and financing. PLA becomes an issue on the effective dates of new permit requirements. Under the 2007 MS4 permit, there were two critical effective dates. In 2008, or the treatment control requirements of the permit became effective, and then in 2010, the hydro modification requirements became effective. Now, under the 2013 iteration of the order, the new land development requirements will become effective on December 24, 2015. So we're a little bit more than a year away from these new requirements becoming effective. At that point, it will be necessary to know which projects are going to move forward under the new heightened requirements or more restrictive requirements of the new permit, and which will be allowed to continue under existing requirements of the 2007 or earlier order. Under the 2007 permit, PLA was defined by a footnote on page 17, as you see at the top of your screen. In essence, what it said was that projects or phases of projects that had begun grading or building activities before the effective date of a new requirement were considered grandfathered under existing provisions. This is also illustrated in the diagram at the bottom of the screen, which simply shows, very simplistically shows kind of from left to right, typical stages of approval that a project would go through for, in this case, it would be for a private development project, but discretionary approvals on the left, and then sort of moving through successively other approvals until you get to building and grading permits on the right. Critical thing here, of course, is the vertical red line between final maps and grading permits. Under the 2007 permit, and as most, I think, co-permittee policies or approaches currently stand, if the effective date of the permit comes and it's represented by that vertical red line, if you are on the left-hand side of that line at that stage in your development process, then essentially you're not grandfathered. But if you've gotten to grading permits or you've gotten to building permits, then you're going to be grandfathered and move forward that way. So this is essentially how the county does it right now. This follows very close to that footnote. And I would say it's probably fair to characterize most co-permittee approaches as being something like that, very close to it.
Excuse me.
Yes.
We're talking about overall requirements issued by Water Board.
Yes.
But implemented in each jurisdiction by their own planning commissions or councils or however they do.
Yes.
Yes.
So we start with the permit requirements, that's the basic ground rules, and then we implement according to, you know, however we interpret that.
Make a distinction of
yes.
Aspects.
Yes. So there's been quite a bit of ongoing coordination on this issue over the last year, and particularly in the last half a year. But it's critical to note as a starting point that the 2013 permit does not include the footnote that you were just looking at. So even though it does reference the fact that after the effective date, you still have to decide whether you're going to grandfather or not grandfather projects, it doesn't give you that reference point anymore. This has led some parties to question whether or not a different interpretation of PLA was intended by removing the footnote, or whether a different interpretation might be pursued under the 2013 order. And we've had quite a bit of discussions on this. In April 2014, the county actually approached regional board staff and we had a discussion about this to seek clarification as to whether there was an intent. And at that point, it was explained to us that there was no particular intent in removing the footnote, and we did, in follow-up to that meeting, we received a letter from Ms. Hagen stating that. So we did get some clarification that at least it wasn't intentional. That, of course, doesn't answer the question of whether or not the removal of the footnote needs to matter. There are still parties who would argue that because the footnote is not there, even though the intent might have not been to change anything, that it does change the game, and it's time to start talking about whether or not we should be looking at a different footnote, or sorry, not a different footnote, but a different approach. So what's critical here is we've continued with dialogues with co-permittees. We've also talked to building industry representatives since that time. And one thing that's changed, at least in the county's perception of how this all plays out, is something that was explained to us as a basic problem that I don't think we really grasp in prior iterations of this. So the one thing that you see on your screen right now that you didn't see one slide ago was you see a dollar sign. And that dollar sign represents project financing. So what typically happens is when a project starts through the discretionary approval processes and starts moving through all of these approvals, financing is always established early on. The problem is that when you get to that point where you get those approvals, which is represented by the stamp on the diagram, is sometimes separated by many, many years. And those years can often exceed the permit length. So what you get is you have a requirement in some cases to actually impose newer, more strict MS4 permit requirements, but for the project proponent, financing has basically been set years and years ahead of time. So that means that there are new financial requirements that are going to have to be dealt with, and this causes a problem for some projects, for probably many projects if they're playing out over a number of years. So this is something that's obviously come to light for us. We have a better understanding of it, and it's really why we're here today. I mean, if it was, I think if we didn't understand this, the county probably wouldn't be part of this dialogue anymore. We'd just continue with our previous interpretation of construction permits as it was in the 2007 permit. But we do recognize that there is a potential problem needing to be dealt with here. In doing so, I also want to point out, just from a jurisdictional perspective, that if there is a movement to change the way that prior lawful approval is approached in the San Diego region, whether that comes from the regional board or anywhere else, as local jurisdictions, we're always sort of we're always regulated regulators. We're always in between trying to balance risk, and that's what this diagram in front of you represents. There are risks to private and public projects that get caught in this sort of time lag between financing and prior lawful approvals. It creates unpredictability. It can dictate project redesign, schedule impacts and cost increases, and possibly impact project feasibility further down the line. So there are real risks to the projects. But in pursuing a different approach, if we were to try to mitigate or shift some of those risks away from the projects, we also have to understand from the jurisdictional perspective that it potentially creates risk for us as the jurisdictions. Obviously, we have strict liability for the quality of discharges from our jurisdictions or from our MS4s within our jurisdictions. Whether or not we're more lenient or more strict on a project proponent, we still ultimately have that liability. So we're responsible for water quality impacts regardless. It can create an MS4 permit noncompliance for us. It can create a transfer of costs or liability to us, because if water isn't treated in one place, it may have to be treated in another. So if we go with earlier standards for some projects or even just a few large projects, we have to consider what impact that will have on the jurisdiction to later maybe have to build additional treatment facilities or to pick up that pollution somewhere else. So the critical thing for us is jurisdictional discretion. We want to make sure that whatever policies go forward in this region in the future, that we retain the discretion to be able to make those decisions or not have liability handed to us through a change in the permit. This might be one way to do it. I think that's what's going to be suggested today. So that's just kind of what we wanted to let you know, is sort of the jurisdictional groundwork for us anyway. You're going to be actually seeing a detailed proposal as we finish out today from BIA, and I have to say it's important that everybody understand the county does not have a policy direction on this right now. We don't support or oppose that proposal. We're happy to be working with BIA and everyone else, and we're happy to continue this dialogue. If your board would like to continue that in any way, we will gladly participate in it, and we do think that there's a problem we're solving here, and we're happy to be part of that.
Sorry, can I interrupt here?
Yeah.
The Orange County Fire Authority is outside saying they got an emergency phone call from someone in the council chambers here. Is everyone okay? No one's called 911? Okay. I don't see any problems here, but you never know. Any logical explanation back there, Roger?
I don't know. They said they were told to respond to city council chambers, and they brought all their EMT techs and everything.
Okay. No one seems to be under duress here, so sorry to interrupt.
Oh, darn.
All right. That's all I have.
Thank you very much. Yes.
Hello again. I'm Heather Stroud from the City of San Diego. Like John, I'm only expressing the position of the city here for a co-permittee. But the city does agree that more clarity is needed on this prior lawful approval issue, and preferably in the permit language. I think Ms. Hagan's letter from May 29th, 2014 to the county laid out the pickle that we're in pretty well. Basically, we have some parties, and I think you may hear this today, arguing that prior lawful approval could mean any approval a project ever had, no matter when that came 20 years ago. And then we have the interpretation that we've gotten from staff and from Ms. Hagan that the intent was not to change the meaning of that from the 2007 permit, which I think the intent of that language was that prior lawful approval would only mean where we could not legally impose the new stormwater requirements on these projects. So in other words, a true vested right. So there's a lot of room in between those two things, any approval versus a vested right. You know, the vested right typically would come right at the end of the process where you have a building and grading permit and maybe even work done in reliance on those permits. So the city, we have looked at the proposal that BIA will be presenting today, I believe, and we believe it's an appropriate alternative for consideration. Although there are some specific the concerns about specific language being that it does seem to put the initial step very early in the process, where that would be prior lawful approval, basically any approval, and then kind of puts a burden on the co-permittees to do anything new beyond that. So we're happy to continue working with them, but we're not sure we're quite there yet. Thank you.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. I guess I'm the cleanup guy today on this topic. I think
that's what we're here for, cleaning up.
Okay. I think that probably Mr. Anderson and I may be the only ones out there that remember how we got here originally, what was it, 4 permit cycles ago, when at lunch the county council kind of woke up to the next meeting and went, wait a minute, without some form of prior lawful approval, we may be creating a problem for the co-permittees called inverse condemnation. Now, it's never come up, you know, there's not a test case that I can point you to, but that's what started the problem. But if I can, I'd like to take you through a very quick presentation about why we think this needs to be addressed. I guess I pressed the button. Yeah, okay. I'm here today on behalf of the coalition. The coalition is more than just PIA. It's a group, all the folks that are involved in the development, construction of both public and private infrastructure. We've worked with the co-permittees, as you've already heard. We've worked with regional board staff. We've worked with Coastkeeper. And while we don't necessarily agree on the exact fix, I think we all agree that the section requires some clarification. And we hope, we believe it's time for the regional board to kind of weigh in and help us with that clarification. Currently, we have this language in the board, in the permit, that says the co-permittees may allow previous development requirements to apply where there is a prior lawful approval, an undefined term. Staff has modified that somewhat so that the trigger now becomes when the PMP design manual is implemented rather than updated. That's a timing problem. We really thank staff for fixing the problem. But it really doesn't address the initial problem, which is, what's a prior lawful approval and under what conditions should the co-permittees be comfortable in saying that the prior permit requirement should apply? So, really three questions. What was the purpose of this section of the permit? What is the prior lawful approval? And when may a co-permittee use its discretion to grant that prior lawful approval? As I mentioned before, we believe that the purpose of this section was to address the problem that permitting cycles and entitlement cycles don't necessarily jive up. That it's not uncommon for an entitlement cycle to run 7 to 10 years, sometimes longer, whereas we have permit cycles that run every 5 years. And so we start out with a project understanding the rules of the road, and whether it's a public project where we're looking for public funding or bonds, or a private project where we're looking for some funds, we have some basic rules of the road that we can predict on. We know. But if the entitlement cycle runs longer than the permit cycle, the problem becomes, whether it's the bond underwriter or the capital improvement project or whatever else, how do we know that's really the cost? We don't. And so what we wanted to do in terms of this purpose was to provide some predictability and at the same time to avoid takings claims against the co-permittees. That a developer comes in and says, hey, wait a minute, I have a vested right. It's either statutory or it's common law, but I have a vested right, and you can't change the rules of the game on me in the middle of the road. To have the co-permittees have what they needed to act responsibly. And this is a typical example. This is one of my clients. Well, I'm not sure as happy that I've used them as the example, but okay. This is a public-private partnership for the redevelopment of Brownfield Airport, a city asset that has not been handled, redeveloped since 1962. Really needs a lot of work. We started that process back in 2006. By 2009, the City Development Department had approved the site design, including a water quality technical report that meets the 2007 permit requirements. Not the initial requirements, but the full-on hydromod requirements. 2013, our EIR gets certified. 2014, we get sued. After all, it's a project. CEQA comes along, everybody gets sued. We should expect that. We don't expect to commence grading until about 2016. If we have to now change and go back, we run into two problems. One, it's likely that the project will no longer be in substantial conformity with its entitlements. That means I've got to go all the way back to the EIR, say I'm changing my site development plan, amend or supplement my EIR, and start that process all over again. So I kind of have to jump back. It's kind of like chutes and ladders. I get to jump back 4 years. The second problem becomes, I don't know, and this now becomes a problem of, is the investor willing to say, okay, we'll go back another 4 years. We will expose ourselves to another CEQA litigation. Or, you know, at some point you start saying, No. Why is that bad? Well, first, because the public's denied jobs, an important infrastructure resource, and in this case, probably most important, better water quality now. That airport has zero BMPs. You have all these runways, all these taxiways, everything runs off the property. This project would not only handle its existing, its new development, but create best management practices at the 07 level for all of the existing issues there. So we get a huge net water quality gain along with all the other, we call them social reasons for doing this. As I mentioned, currently we have this undefined term. And that creates uncertainty for the co-permittees. It creates uncertainty for the development of both public and private projects. And this is not unique to Region 9. Other regions have had to address the same problem. And so, Mr. McSweeney, your hand has handed out, you'll get excerpts from their permits. But other people have done it. And what they have done, and you can see this spreadsheet here, is they've looked at various prior lawful approval, a development agreement, a vesting tentative map, whatever. And you can see that in all the four cases that we could identify, they were either silent on whether that became a prior lawful approval. And we think in some cases it's just because of the logic. If you're going to approve, if you're going to say that you're exempt with a tentative map, then it's obviously, you don't have to talk about a construction permit because you're already exempted. But they've already dealt with this issue. And the means by which they have dealt with it is to say, we're not going to argue over a narrow or broad version of what a prior lawful approval is. Rather, we're going to give discretion with guidance to the co-permittees as to how it should apply. And so, you know, when may a co-permittee apply its discretion? We think when the project complies with the previous permit cycle requirements. We're not saying go back to 1990. We're saying, you know, if it complied with 07, that should be substantial evidence that the co-permittee should use their discretion to say, yes, it should apply. If the project has a vested right, this project already has a development agreement or a vested tentative map, and I'll agree with Heather, we have not tested yet whether this permit, whether federal law required the permit to deal with this issue, or whether it's subject just to this permit. But nobody wants to get into that fight. And also, the co-permittees should have the discretion to deal with special circumstances, even if this project did comply with the 07 permit, and the co-permittee looks at it and says, wait a minute, this is going to be problematic in terms of meeting NDP, this is going to be problematic for some other reason, they still have the discretion. Why? Because clarity and consistency benefits everybody. The project applicant, the co-permittee, the regional board, and your staff, so you know which side of the line of project's on, the non-governmental organizations, and the public at large. So our objective in trying to craft some language, and I'll explain that language a little bit better in a second, because we do not see this as being the ultimate language. We see this as being something that you can direct your staff to put into the draft, but then we have a place to start to play with it, to work on it, rather than kind of sitting in committees, which is what we're doing right now. But it provides clear minimum standards, it recognizes and honors vested rights, it protects the co-permittee, and it reflects statewide trends. And I think this is kind of what both the city and the county are talking about as well. I'm not going to read that language to you, it's too small. But basically what it says is that the co-permittee, if a project has a prior lawful approval, then the co-permittee has the discretion. And if the project complies with the requirements of the previous permit. And we wrote it so that you can just kind of cut and paste this from permit to permit. But if it complies with the previous permit, then presumptively the co-permittee can feel good about saying, yes, that's appropriate. If it doesn't comply with the previous permit, then the burden shifts back to the project proponent to be able to demonstrate, you know, a balance of the equities. Have I done everything possible to the maximum extent practicable to come up to this level versus the co-permittee looking at it and saying, that's good enough, or maybe that's still not good enough. Our ask is very simple. Don't accept our language, but direct your staff to put it into the draft permit so we have a forum to discuss that language. Because at this point, we're still sort of wandering around in the wilderness, and we really need staff and you to weigh in on this thing and give us a forum in which to get some clarity and some direction. Thank you.
Any questions for Mr. Roosevelt?
Yeah, I've got one. Maybe you can help me out. Your brownfield example, you know, you walked us through it, and I think you said something. You said, if we have to later on deal with the 2013 permit, you said it's likely the project will no longer be in compliance. And then we go back to square one. Why? What is fundamentally different with 2013 that would make this project no longer in compliance, that would scrap the whole deal?
Okay, when I go in for my site development permit, part of my site development permit is my water quality technical report that says, where am I going to put all my BMPs, how are they scaled, how are they designed, etc. If now I change the requirements and I have to modify the water quality technical report, and I have to therefore modify the site development permit, there are very stringent rules on how much I can vary the project before I fall out of substantial conformity.
Well, but factually, what gets you across that line so that you've fallen out? I mean, I'm just trying to...
In this particular case...
Mental picture.
In this particular case, we would be required to install the underground tankage, if you will, because we're at an airport and FAA won't let us have open pools, period. Bird distraction, bad. Okay, so we would be putting in retention tankage underground that then would prevent the development of certain areas. And again, we're on the FAA Grand Assurance Airport, where we've said to FAA, we're gonna have a certain percentage of aviation equipment, we're gonna have a certain percentage of this, a certain percentage of that. And I can't make it all fit. I can't fit these additional significant, and depending on our engineer, Rick Engineering says, yeah, you lose about 10 to 20% of your ground. I can't make that fit and still fit it into the substantial conformity package. But I can go back to DSD and say, see, no change, it's okay. They're gonna turn around to me and say, oh, you lost 20% of your ground? At a minimum, you're going to have to go through a process that's going to, and likely, an addendum to your CEQA certification that exposes the whole project to another round of litigation. That's a problem, and I don't think you get better, that much better water. Yeah, Brendan, Representative Brendan, you're better at something than I am.
Let's jump in for a minute. I think Wayne started to get to it, but...
Do you have an example of this project, because of the FAA requirements, has more moving parts? Just like a standard development project.
Well, I think this, from this standpoint, for water quality and hydromod, it can apply to any project. The BMP sizes have already been set, so we've implemented bioretention, extended detention throughout the entire project with a real low impact development approach. We started back in 2008. So the size of those BMPs would get bigger. For example, the hydromod criteria under the 2007 permit, we can take credit for existing impervious areas. So we're only mitigating for the increase from existing impervious to the proposed. We're still providing water quality for all of the impervious surface, but that was really the big difference if we had to apply the 2013 permit the size of BMPs would get a lot larger, and we would start to lose rows of parking or, you know, lose footprint for buildings.
I thought if it was, correct me if I'm wrong on this, David, if it was infeasible to do something on a particular, like, in a footprint, a way to deal with that was by doing BMPs in another part of the watershed or if something along those lines.
I think what you're getting at is in the 2013 permit, there's an alternative compliance option, so if you can't do something on site,
right,
you can
start. So you don't have to, in my thinking, well, why do they have to redesign the airport? Maybe because there are so many moving parts, if there's this alternative compliance off-site option, that might be enough to query the deal. I don't know.
And here's your problem, right, at least at this point on that issue, and it may change. Right now, alternative compliance is very ephemeral. Brendan and I also have the privilege of sitting on the alternative compliance tack. I cannot say to a developer or to an engineer or to an investor, here is what you're going to have to do to meet alternative compliance. That may change at the end of this permit cycle or the next permit cycle, but that's the situation today. So what we're looking for is how do we deal with the situation today in a way, and understand, we fully believe that the co-permittees need their land use discretion. But they also need some guidance that says, here is the thought process, if you will, that you should go through to get to an appropriate decision. That's what's sort of missing from the permit.
Yeah, I think just to summarize, I mean, the concept here is a project that's moved so far along in the process. They've already addressed water quality treatment. They've already addressed hydromodification management. They've implemented all of that onto a site plan. They've received approvals from the City of San Diego of the water quality technical report and the hydromodification management plan. So, you know, the final step is going to that grading permit phase to start implementing the grading and the improvements in the building permits. But all of that is built on the stormwater strategy that was implemented early on in the planning process and has been designed and approved throughout the discretionary approval.
Okay, I think I get the specifics of that one. But I just one final question. It sounds to me like what you all are looking for is, as you put it, you know, certainty. But I get that. But I didn't quite understand how that squares with your request that the co-permittees be given, you know, more discretion to decide what works, what doesn't work, because then it sounds like you, from jurisdiction to jurisdiction, you wouldn't have certainty. You have a lot of different venues and moving targets with each co-permittee conceivable.
We may not have certainty as to the outcome, but everybody will have certainty as to the process. And, you know, if I know what the process is, I have some basis to predict what the outcome will likely be. But if we don't have certainty as to the process, which is where we are today, then it's sort of like anybody's guess. You know, I don't know how the court's going to rule for me, but if I know what the law is, I can at least kind of predict what the decision-making process is going to look like.
Good luck. I appear in courts all the time. I teach civil procedure, and I know what the law is. I can't tell you how the courts are.
No, but at least if I know civil procedure, I know whether this is going to be a 12B or a Rule 56. Come on. Yeah. But Siri, that's our real concern, that we have some certainty over that you help all of us with some certainty over the process. So co-permittees are comfortable that they're not, you know, stepping across the line, so that we can kind of predict, you know, how projects will play out. And again, we're not asking for this huge open book. All we're saying is, you know, if it's a one permit cycle look back for good reason, then I don't know that that's a huge step out of the line.
So much for 30 minutes.
Sorry.
We
Dan, would you mind clicking back to slide 14?
Yes, ma'am.
It's hard for me to read this. There you go.
Is that the one with the tiny font?
Yes.
Of course.
Yes, ma'am.
So, if you could just explain for a moment how you, for Park Little I, why and how you ended on the development agreement as the line in the sand?
Well, because basically, development's good. If you have a development agreement, you have a statutory vested right. Now, I agree, we can argue whether or not you can test that and see whether or not this permit, this requirement in this permit was mandated by state or federal law. And if so, then maybe that trumps your development agreement rights. Nobody's tested that yet. And we kind of think that given what all the other regional boards have done, we'd rather make the assumption, we'd rather take this route and assume that a development agreement grants you that prior lawful approval, because the next step for the co-permittee then becomes, that's good, but it may not be good enough.
So when you say what that original words have done, are you talking about slide 10? Sorry. And where it says exempt or silent, that chart, thank you for providing this table.
Yes.
So, and I was listening and trying to follow along, but perhaps then I misunderstood. Where you're saying that they're silent on the development agreements, what are you taking that to mean?
In some cases, they are just purely silent. There's no question about that. And that's why we provided you with the various language from various jurisdictions, from various regional boards. We have one that clearly exempts it, the others are silent. If, however, you're exempting a development agreement and you're exempting a vested tenant map and a tentative map, logic says that even if you're silent beyond that, if those things exempt you as or if those things create a prior lawful approval, then the later things in the chain, you know, the certificate of occupancy, the construction permit, whatever, would not even be meaningful. Because you've already achieved the status. We agree that on that first line, there are at least three of these guys that don't even talk about development agreements. Again, this may be something that you want to say, well, maybe we want to test it. But I think that's something maybe that we want to leave to the discretion of the co-permittees.
I guess this is outside of what I handle on a normal basis, so I'm sorry if I'm asking a lot of detailed questions, but am I also reading this correctly, that development agreement is, that's first in the process, then tentative map, then the vesting tentative, right? I mean, that's how it's meant to be read?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, that would generally be the process of the hierarchy.
Okay, thank you. That's what I had understood. Yeah, and if you could, for me, because it's been a long time since I've thought about these issues, a typical project, recognizing that they're probably a network of typical projects, in the years that you've set out for us, how in the spectrum of a 7 to 10 year project, when do you get that development agreement versus the tentative map? Just picking one out of the box.
In order to get to a development agreement, and they're probably, of all of these categories,
sure,
probably the most unique, I agree. You're probably 3-4 years in. It's still a discretionary agreement between the jurisdiction and the developer. It's still subject to CEQA. So you've got all of those issues standing out there. We don't see that many development agreements anymore. The ones that we do see frequently are the best intended map and the tentative map. Because you can't get any, you gotta have one or the other if you're not going anywhere.
Okay.
And there, yeah, you're 4, 5, 7, 6 years in, easy.
Thank you.
Okay.
Let me just ask a quick question. The brownfields in the city of San Diego.
Yes, sir.
And their rules are pretty much the same as the counties where they use that similar spot in the process as in the footnote?
I can only speak to my experience, and at least my experience with the city was that if you brought forward a water quality technical report and you met all of the requirements of the then existing permit, then they deemed that to be an acceptable prior lawful approval. No, they didn't always go to grading, frankly.
At the county level, they make it really clear. You don't have anything on what, because we don't know what the regional water board's going to require, and you're going to have to meet whatever they have in place at the time you get your grading permit. The city does not do that one.
Yeah, that's where
they make it really, really clear.
Yeah.
Okay, so the city is a little bit vaguer. If you meet what you described. So in 06, you didn't have that clear understanding one way or another.
No. And in fact, it really becomes, I got kind of pulled into this, because it really does become problematic, because the question still arises. If I have a vesting tentative map, a statutory right, forget development agreements for a minute, but I have to wait until I actually commence grading to have that right mature, there's a disconnect there. Thank you.
Other questions?
Thank you. I found the chart in bigger text in the second handout, so thank you for that. My eyes are reeling at a young age. But would you mind, unless I already have it, would you mind providing the proposed language in that?
I believe
it's in here too. I just couldn't find it looking around. Sorry. So we have it in bigger font.
And we would be
No, it's just on the slide, right? That's what I was going to say. If we could have it, and if you want to mind providing to Ms. Hagen or
whoever. No, we'll be glad to provide.
Actually, what I'll do is I'll ask and impose on Joe to print out one set of these full sheets.
Thank you.
Okay. Trying to save paper. I'm Michael McSweeney. I'm the Senior Public Policy Advisor for the Building Industry Association. I didn't say anything under public comment, but I'd like to take just 30 seconds to say thank you to the board and to the executive officer and the staff. It is very refreshing to know that we can collaborate, work together, try and get things worked out, answers as we go through this process. It's very beneficial to our industry. My purpose is to try and use layman's language to try and give you a feel for why this is so important to us. And quite frankly, one of the things that we've done looking at this is we're trying to look out for our friends in the Kokomati and Geosite as well. Overall, what is gained? What's driving this is the fear of the uncertainty, the unknown. There are a few projects in San Diego that have entitlements that have rolled over. There's a couple outlying projects that go back to 1999. We don't represent every landowner or developer in the county, but we've consistently said since this permit was adopted, it's unrealistic to think that if you have one of those, that you're going to do nothing or next to nothing. Basically, the goalpost is going to end up de facto being the 2007 permit. So I want you to contrast that against what we did before that, which was, you know, went from nothing to something to a little bit more of something to 2007 to now. So your backstop, for the most part, is going to be capture, detain, treat, release slowly, as opposed to what we're going to do under the 2013 permit. So those underlying, what we're trying to, in essence, is to ask you, give us the fence line. This is a floor to work from. Each co-permittee will be able to use their discretion. If they need a little more certainty or they need a little bit to raise the bar, they can do that. But the advantage for us is we know across the region that this is what the floor is. So there's a good common understanding. And this affects every one of the co-permittees in their projects that they have to build, just like it affects us. I want you to try and conceptualize a couple of cost examples. Everyone knows where Liberty Station is in San Diego. McMillan has proposals to build a couple of hotels. They've been through the process. They came to a meeting and they laid out the plans of the mayor's office and pointed out that under the 2007 permit, here's how all our BMPs. But if we're not grandfathered, then we don't have anywhere to put the water unless we go underground and build tanks. problem is they're right on the bay. The water table's too high. So it becomes, it's like building a convention center. It becomes economically infeasible now to build the BMPs because they're going to cost so much, because you're going to have to constantly dewater them. Another developer up in Carmel Valley. Each finished lot costs about $400,000. If they're grandfathered under 2007, it saves them probably $35 million. Now, when I say it saves them, the end result is, what's the benefit for water quality? All that water is going to be treated, filtered, released under the 2007 permit requirements, as opposed to detained on-site and not being able to be released. And I think, Mr. Morales, what you pointed out as far as the alternative compliance, we're looking at that the same as you. Well, you know, how can we skin this cat? We've got this extra tool in the toolbox. But that tool hasn't been thoroughly vetted. And remember, that's optional to the co-permittees. So until we've got a program up and running that we can refer to, we have to almost treat it like we don't have it. And we're not cutting new ground here. And I wanted to ask Brendan to spend a minute to walk you through, because he was the author of this. Other regional boards have put language in their permits that address this. So what we're asking for, and I think that this is kind of a new day for the regional board dealing with the regulated community and the co-permittees. So we're asking for some direction. I know that in many cases, you write the permit big enough, and it's up to them to write the rules to figure it out. I think this is to a point where it would be super beneficial to us to have some guidance, establish a floor that we can build from. So Brendan, if you wanted to add anything on the walk them through that quickly.
Yeah, I know we've been on the issue for a while here, but I think this just goes to your question, Stephanie. That spreadsheet basically intended to summarize what is in this handout. So we've tried to go through, we kind of researched all the different municipal permits and B&B manuals throughout the state of California just to get a sense for how prior lawful approval was dealt with throughout the state, trying not to reinvent the wheel. The conclusion after you go through and dissect the language, and all of them generally ended up as about a page long, but the general conclusion was that all of the regions were saying, as long as you had a discretionary permit approval, then that was considered prior lawful approval. For any project that did not have a discretionary permit approval required and went straight to a ministerial approval, so the final engineering stage, then as long as you had your first ministerial approval, then that was also granted a prior lawful approval. So they're all worded differently, but that's the general bottom line throughout all the different examples that we found. And some of them were actually in the permit themselves, and then others, the language showed up more in the DMP design manual.
Thank you.
Quick housekeeping question. In that handout, are those handwritten notes from you that are in the, or who put the handwritten notes in that?
Let me see here.
That's your part.
Yeah, I think that some of these handwritten notes were me trying to draw a conclusion from, okay. You know.
And then also, can you provide your last name for the record?
Brendan Hasty.
If you would just fill out one of the cards on your way out so we have it for the recorder.
Sure.
Okay, I believe that covers all the speakers that we have. It certainly covers all the slips. I would like to introduce into the record that may already have been done a letter that we received from Coastal Environmental Rights Foundation arguing against the position of speakers. And I would like to make a request, because the process of submitting comments goes on for a bit, and then there will be a very broad discussion in February when there's the opportunity for the board to actually approve the permit, or the extension of the permit, I should say. I am sure that the county and the city of San Diego will weigh in on their thoughts on both sides of this issue and tell us what they think and what their recommendation is and what their opinions are. I would like to ask that of you, Mr. Rosenbaum, I would like for you to come in with a brief on why we should not do what you want. And I will ask the same of the Coastal Environmental Rights Foundation of why we should not do what they want, so that we have the advantage of your thinking and a broad set of thoughts about coalition. I think that is our last agenda item, except, of course, for lunch, which I tried to raise earlier.
And we do have a closed session item, item 8F.
Okay, 8F.
The City of San Diego's lawsuit against the Regional Board concerning Kinder Morgan's Mission Valley terminus.
We just can't ask the representatives of the city to dismiss it here on the spot.
We can ask.
Sorry. Thank you, Heather. Okay, we will then move into closed session, and unless there is something to report, we will not come back. Thank you all for coming. This morning, early afternoon, we're very interested.
Chris, I assume you're going to do lunch in the room.
Yeah.
There, so you got it. I'll come back again later then.
Oh,
I think you're done. The court report is done, right?
You're done.
Well, they provided.
So when you guys are back, you're all the way down there.
Oh, yeah. She needs the spellings of the cards of people's names.
Barry has the cards. Thank you very much.
I know, that's what I'm talking about. Sorry, you're
on. Thank you.
The Tribuco?
Yeah.
We don't have stuff.
We do have to come back.
Yes. What's that? Yeah, give me a second here. I need to get the box anyway. It's just Sean.
So used to it.
You guys, that's the water that you swim through. Sure, because I'm better.
Yeah, give me a second.
I'm sorry.
Oh, yeah.
So we had to get on your own?
Basket, and I have, sorry, here's my thumb drive.
Okay, great. Thank
and
you.
I carpooled with Tomas, so I crossed that out, and then I got just hitched a ride to the airport. I thought that was the other one.
Oh.
So I
wrote.
Thanks,
everybody.
When
do
you go to
you don't need anything else from us? So, right? So we're good. That's what I think. All right. Good stuff.
Yeah. I don't think they've ever been asked to argue against their point before.
Yeah, that's going to be interesting.
Yeah, no. It's interesting. Yeah.
I'm an idiot.
And you're asked a hard question of Marianne about the
about the past.
Yeah.
Richard did a good job of answering that.
They did, yeah.
And I can't wait to tell Chad and Wayne.
Oh, I know. Yeah, about the irrigation thing. So, well done. You guys, you can't see all my.
It is. I shaved my head. So.
Oh, yeah. You guys.
That may be throwing you off.
Drafting up the agreement, so we'll get that in order.
February shall be entertaining.
Friday, Saturday, Sunday, if you want this.
I'll check with Catherine, I'm going to start with those guys and stuff.
Hey, Jimmy?
Hey.
Mike wanted, Mike McSweeney.
Yeah, he sent back.
Our reporter was wanting to have a printout. I don't know if you guys are wanting to still have that printout.
I imagine Eric has that language. Do you have that language, Eric?
What?
The one that's,
The real, we couldn't read language, they're proposed.
No, I don't.
I can get asked, we're going to ask, we'll ask copy of the presentation. And we'll
I'll
post
send it to you now.
Okay.
Yeah, and then we can...
It's sitting here on my desktop.
Okay, cool, that'd be great.
We can send that off then.
What's the email address, Eric?
Ebecker at... Or is it, it's eric.becker now, right?
I don't think so.
Is it just...
It's just Ebecker.
Okay. I think it's both.
Yeah, it might be. It might be Eric. Yeah. Eric got
better. Yeah.
I just sent it to both email addresses.
Okay.
Let's see here. New mail.
Thanks for hosting.
Oh, no problem. This has been an interesting day, that's for sure.
Yeah, the whole 911 thing was this.
Well, we identified who the person was. The issue is that person is missing.
Oh, okay.
So, eric.becker at...
Waterboards.
.ca.
.ca.gov.
And I also sent it to just Eric combined.
Yeah, Ebecker, yeah.
Ebecker?
Yeah, at same at waterboards.ca.gov.
Okay. Language. Insert attachment. I have no idea which one's. There's only four on my desktop.
Okay. Good?
Yeah, I'm just going to send you all the presentations that I can't decipher from the name on the
file. Yeah, that's fine. We'll post them all anyways.
All right, then you're going to get them as they were displayed here then.
Okay. Yeah, that's it. Not that attractive.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you.
See ya.
Clicker.
Before they come back and I have to be out of here?
I don't know how long they're going to be. They're doing lunch right now and then they're doing closed session. They're in a room right over here.
Can I stay here for a while?
Yeah, you can stay for a while.
Perfect, thank you.
Stay until 5 o'clock if you wanted to.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah. I'm glad that it's...
We went on down to the Mayflower at Kernville and went up above Johnsonville Bridge for 3 or 4 miles and fished that. That was nice.
Was it warm?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Coming back out along the trail with us. I think it was kind of beating one up.
Can you do it?
Yeah. The chair's not here.
I know. Where's our chair?
He's coming.
Shocking, though. Catherine, can I ask you a question? My mentor took me to lunch a couple weeks ago, because I wasn't thinking about it, and I tried to find him on the tab, but he's also a GC of the BIA. Do I need to record it?
Okay.
From a single source under $50.
Okay, perfect. Yeah,
so that if you report it,
okay. No, no, no.
We're just adjourning.
Ready?
He's just going to open up the meeting long enough to adjourn it.
Nothing to report.
We're done.
Okay. Nice thing.
Meeting adjourned.
Seconded.
There will be no vote. There will be no discussion.
Okay, thanks, Catherine.
There will be no dissent.
I will not be accepting the end of the meeting.
Are you sure you don't want to leave discuss adjournment? We're in conflict with your law firm.
I know. But we said it came up in the morning, so I just don't get that. Rather than people start talking.
Bye.
Bye.